Jump shot. It goes. Zach Randolph does it again. 3-point game. They've got to go for three now. No choice. Conley for three. Ties it up.
First team all defense. First team all defense.
Here's Gasol from outside. Tony Allen. Shot clock at four. Randolph puts it up. Puts it in.
You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Grizzlies Tuesday edition of the show. Every Tuesday, as always, Amari Sankofa of The Athletic joins us every single week. But before we get to that, make sure you go and subscribe to the show, whatever podcast platform you choose, Spotify, Stitcher, any of those things, it's all over it. So you don't miss an episode every single day. Just make sure you subscribe. If you're in Apple iTunes, go leave a review, rate the show, and you can help us out big time by doing that for us in Apple iTunes. Amari, what's going on, man?
Hey, man, what's going on?
We were just talking before the show. It has been quite the day for myself. I literally haven't even had time to tweet about this, and I will. But my four-year-old locked our keys in our vehicle while it was running. And you would think if you pay enough for a vehicle that is a smart vehicle, it would not do that. But apparently that's not the case. Anyway, so that's how I spent my afternoon. How was your day?
I don't have a 4-year-old, so I didn't have to deal with that. We had locked any doors.
That's the ultimate issue, having a four-year-old.
The issue is having a toddler here. Otherwise, it was a much smoother day for sure.
You know, I spent all my afternoon trying to get into a car that is made not to be able to get into, and then I had to just finally call a locksmith. Because I know what people are thinking, like, just use your other set of keys, mark it at home. But we only have one set of keys in this particular vehicle because the little key fobs are like $400, which is also a ripoff, by the way. So if anybody's out there that makes keys, let me know. Hit me up. Anyway, let's talk about Ja Morant. He is a sensation, man. He did things on Friday night that I just didn't think we'd see this year. And we were seeing it this early so far. And I did the show on Monday, and I kind of made a point like this, that he is – the reason people are talking about this team. National media are writing stories, or you see alerts come across your phone about ESPN stories or CBS, or even some of your national writers at The Athletic. I mean, these things are happening because of Ja Morant. You did a piece on him and Mike Conley, but man, how fun is it for pure basketball for you, for me, for you? How fun is it to watch Ja Morant? Man, I know what I feel, but I know you feel the same way. But it's so fun.
Yeah, it's been pretty incredible to see just how good he is through 13 games of the season. Stuff he's doing now, I don't know if I expected him to do until year two or year three. For the vast majority of point guards, it takes time for them to really put everything together. But he's already a very, very good slasher to the rim. I think if we do his ball handling, his passing, athleticism would be good. But for him to kind of leverage it into the plays that he's been doing so far has really been something to witness. I mean, last week just in general was a clinic for him, having a game winner at Charlotte, and then outplaying Mike Conley on Mike Conley's homecoming. I think he wouldn't admit to it, but I do think he felt that extra something, going up against his predecessor some of the just the ball handling for one. I mean, he had the behind the back scoop, I think, in the second quarter. That was just like, wait,
that was amazing.
Yeah, he just had so many plays throughout the night like that. There's only a handful of point guards in the NBA who could even do stuff like that. Like, I think I've mentioned Kyrie in here before, but some of his drives to the rim are Kyrie-esque. This dude is just insane to watch every night. He's a highlight machine already.
Yeah, that scoop shot was like That was amazing, man. You are up there at the top, and people don't know if we have two media cities. We have one up top, and then there's like seven or eight spots down below. And you were down there. You and Peter kind of swap those spots every once in a while. You went up there at the top, but man, like we generally don't like, we're really not like cheering for teams because we're generally like writing or typing or tweeting or something like that. But everybody in that building, when that little scoop shot like hit rim like twice, you just kind of hold your breath collectively. And then it was like an automatic, like, oh my gosh, what just happened? It was impressive. And you're right. Like we asked him like about like going against Mike Conley in post game. And like, he's never going to say like, yeah, it was a point. I mean, I really wanted to not stick it to Mike, but be better than Mike. I wanted to show people why I'm here. And he's never going to say it, but you know, like that's got to play into some part of it, right? Like going up against Mike Conley, trying to be better than he is, got to play into it at some point.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think, naturally, you're the second pick of the draft. And Mike Conley got traded the day before they drafted Ja. And the way, like, he downplayed it so much that, this was a meaningful game that I think you kind of just assume the opposite. Like, he's downplaying it so much that this obviously means a lot to him. He there's just no way that this game had no meaning for him whatsoever. Yeah. And, and it should mean something extra for him. You're a rookie. You're the new guy. You don't have to prove yourself to Mike, obviously, but you certainly want everybody leaving that building saying, oh, yeah, Jaws is going to be better than Mike Conley. why wouldn't you want people to say that, basically?
I put it like this. When I was walking down from the media section, because it's in the pinnacle level, so we have to go down through a bunch of fans, basically, to get from where we're at to down to the press conference room. The media room, when I'm walking through there, I didn't hear anybody talk about Mike Conley. Like, I'll be honest with you. All I heard was people talking about how awesome Ja Morant is. Like, it was a strange feeling. People might wouldn't have went into that night on Friday night talking about Mike Conley, what he's done to this franchise, but they left that building talking about Ja Morant, which is kind of, definitely was a passing the torch. I thought it was interesting that you, and we're talking to Ja Morant after the game. You actually, I think it was you that asked him about, like, did he see himself like a Mike Conley, kind of his legacy? And he didn't really answer. And I would have loved to him just say, yeah, I dream about that. Like, who doesn't? Like, I dream about being a legend. But he didn't really kind of downplayed it. Like you said, he downplayed a lot of those answers that it really felt like he just was the exact opposite.
For sure. And, I did ask him that. I think I asked him. Because he had gotten questions all day, and then, of course, after the game, just hinting at obviously playing against Mike Conley, but also what he wanted to prove, basically. And, he downplayed all of them. But I asked him, do you think about your legacy at all? Do you contemplate, ever having your jerseys lifted in the rafters? Do you ever think about, having your name, spoken amongst, the other great point guards, not just in franchise history, but in general, like, is that something that ever crosses your mind? And of course he said no, but come on, Ja,
right.
We know you do. We know you do. We see your Instagram. We see your posts. We know you clearly want to be a great player. And if you want to be a great player, then obviously you think about those things.
Well, you also would be human, you, me, everybody listening to this show, we all think about what could be in our careers or whatever we're doing. Like, we all want to be the best in whatever we do. We're always trying to be the best. I mean, I know that most people know this. I'm a videographer. That's what I do for a living. I know it sounds crazy, but I don't write about sports living. You do that for a living. You want to be the best journalist you could be. I want to be the best videographer I could possibly be. So it's just, I think it's normal. And I would have loved for him to just say, yeah, I think about it all. I dream about it. Who doesn't? And he's a young kid. He's trying not to say anything. He's probably just, I think Ja's very guarded in those scrums when we get done. I haven't really seen him. He's not like Jaren. Jaren just kind of talks about whatever. Like, he's very open, but I feel like Ja's pretty guarded when we talked about after the game. I don't know if you got the same vibe.
No, he definitely is. He's extremely guarded. It was funny, actually, after the game, I asked him, did this mean more to beat Mike Conley? Which I think we asked him, like, several variations of that question. And he said, no, just another game. Go out, I got to win with my teammates, yada, yada. And then I asked Jaren, after it doesn't mean more to beat Mike Conley. And Chang goes, like, he almost like wrote his eyes, and then he was like, of course, what do you mean? Of course it means more to beat Mike Conley. Because Jaren doesn't care. Like, he's going to, like, it's an obvious question with an obvious answer. But the only reason why I asked, like, I already knew the answer was going to be yes, but you only asked because when Ja says no, at that point, you just want somebody to be honest with you, you know?
Right. And, yeah, I mean, I think it's also it's a little bit of personality thing, but it's also the year thing. I mean, I think once Ja gets more comfortable and knowing what he kind of, I guess, can and can't say. But yeah, it is definitely a juxtaposition of the two kids, for sure. I mean, Jaren asks us what he should do in media scrums. He doesn't pretend to care or know. He's just out here playing basketball and wants to talk and to get done with it. So it's definitely a very strange juxtaposition of the two guards as they kind of talk to us. Let's have a quick break. We'll be right back. We'll talk more of the Mari Sankofa of The Athletic when we get back. Welcome back to the show. Talk with Mari Sankofa of The Athletic. Want to talk about the debacle that was Sunday night. I actually didn't come to the game. What was I doing? I was with my kids, and I was sick all through the weekend, and sick Friday, just been terribly, haven't felt great. So I just had to stay home with the kids and hang out, and thank God I did. That was a tough game, man. What was your takeaway on that game? That was, I mean, they're going to get blowouts like this. I thought, quite honestly, we'd have more by now than we have. I think we've been spoiled a little bit in some of the close games, but what was your kind of takeaway from, you know, defensively from that game?
My takeaway pretty much is just Denver's a better team. You know, Denver's a better team that knew what it had to do to win, and they did it. We're going to see, you know, as you mentioned, that, you know, this Grizzlies team doesn't have as much firepower as other teams, especially offensively. Of course, they improved their shooting over the last couple of weeks, but they still don't really have, like, Jamal Murray. They don't really have just like that same caliber of offensive talent. Especially with Jaren kind of having spotty performances, and Ja obviously being a rookie. He's had more good games than bad, but he's still going to have bad games just because he's a rookie. And beyond that, they just haven't had a consistent scoring punch, and we pretty much saw that. The defense hasn't been there, and when they can't score, I mean, the game's pretty much over. And they did have their worst quarter of the season, actually. That second quarter, I think they were outscored. It was like 40.
It was like 44-17.
It was something like that. Yeah, I think it was 44-17. It was just extremely ugly. We just couldn't get anything going. It's hard to kind of single out what went wrong, because everything went wrong, basically. Everything went wrong.
It's one of those games you just kind of trash it and move on. Like, you try not to even really look at it. I feel like it's one of those games the coach is just like, you know what, let's just not even worry about it, because there were so many things it would take us days to go through, and we got another game in 2 days. So I almost related to, like, I mean, Utah, honestly, they missed a lot of those shots. Like, let's be real honest. They missed a lot of open shots, and they make some of the shots I think they normally make, and I think it's a different story. I don't think Utah is as good as Denver, but I think you caught them on a bad night. And I knew that's going to happen too. Like, the Grizzlies are going to catch people. So what did you make of Malik Beasley not playing a lot? Not even really in garbage time.
Yeah, I mean, Malik Beasley hasn't really been in the rotation this season. And I'm not sure exactly why that's been. I mean, obviously, they have a pretty deep squad, and they've been playing well.
They're committed to Jamal Murray.
What's that?
Oh, they're committed to their Jamal Murray. They're committed to their starters.
I mean, they're committed to Jamal Murray. I know that Malik Beasley hasn't been shooting the ball very well, you know, and I'm sure that's obviously a factor in it, because if you have, you know, Jamal Murray playing really well, then, you know, you don't need a guy in a rotation who is going to throw up bricks. You know, it's definitely odd to see a guy who was, I mean, you know, one of the most improved players last year, shot the ball very well.
Right.
Kind of go to not even being in a rotation and struggling to the degree that he has. But Denver, I mean, clearly they're playing well without him, you know, so it may just boil down to the fact that they are a contending team. And, you know, if you don't have to wait for a guy to find a shot, then you just don't do it.
Let's take a quick break. We're going to come be right back. We're going to talk about, I'm going to ask Namari some questions that I got in the Monday mailbag. You guys can hear his response to a few of those. And then we'll talk about this game against the Golden State Warriors coming up as well. Stay tuned. Welcome back to the show. Talking with Amari Sankofa of The Athletic. I want to ask you a few of my mailbag questions. Just kind of give people a different perspective on the questions that they ask me. The first one that I've gotten a lot, I'm sure you've gotten this in your mailbags. When do we see Josh Jackson? I almost said Joe Johnson. I almost said Joe Johnson, which we'll never see him. But when do we see Josh Jackson?
I'm going to guess by mid-December. He's been playing so well in the G League that it's just hard for me to imagine that they're going to want him down there much longer.
Do you know, did you ever find out what those internal benchmarks were for Josh?
No, they've avoided giving any semblance of an answer as far as what it is that they're looking for. All we know is that the benchmarks exist. I guess they don't really seem to be stats related because, you know, his stats have been superb down there. So,
yeah.
I don't know if they want him to go a certain amount of time if I was getting in trouble or what it is exactly. But they have made sure to not give us anything as far as that.
Yeah, you got to think we'll see him sooner rather than later. Here's another one. All right. Jaren and Ja have not developed an offensive chemistry yet. What does Taylor Jenkins need to do to facilitate this growth together?
I think, and I was actually talking to Peter Emerson about this walking out of the arena yesterday, because it's, certainly it's not great to see your two main guys not really be on the same page, even if it's so early. I just think Ja and Jaren they approach the game differently, and it's going to take some work from Jenkins for sure to kind of get them going at the same time. Ja's a very much sort of a driving kick type of playmaker.
Right.
And he needs to bond his hands at all times to kind of get that going. Like, he's kind of like Westbrook in that sense. And it's been, fairly effective so far. It's not necessarily a bad thing for him to do. But Jaren, obviously, on offense, needs to be fed, basically. He sets screens and he, dives to the rim, he gets early seals, like he's good at post ups. I think the way Jaren plays isn't necessarily a game that plays well for a guy who likes to drive and kick. It kind of regulates Jaren to more of a Channing Frye type of spot up shooter. And I think from a rhythm standpoint, Some nights it works, sometimes it doesn't. But we saw against Charlotte last week when he was getting those looks inside, punishing mismatches, and he got into a rhythm, and then you see him running, fast breaks a lot harder. He has more confidence in his shot. Like, he hit that step back three in the fourth quarter. It kind of changes his approach to the game when he does get rolling. And he seems to heat up better when he's getting looks inside rather than from outside. Like, that's just the type of player he is. John also hasn't really been a great pick and roll player at this point, which, I think down the road he will be, but, we're 13 games into the season. He's not going to be good at everything. So right. They just have to, I think Jenkins has to do more to get Jaren going. And I think on some level, we have to make peace with the fact that the way John plays isn't always going to get Jaren going. And at that point, it falls on the coaching staff to run stuff to get Jaren more involved, or else he'll go through stresses when he basically disappears out there.
Yeah, I think my response was they should probably put them in the pick and roll more together. But at the same time, I understand why they put Jonas in the pick and roll with Ja a lot more than Jaren, because Jonas is a better role man. Like you mentioned, Jaren's more of that spot up shooter kind of guy. So I get it. But that was essentially the short answer of my answer, because I talked for like 5 minutes about it. But that's kind of I think you're probably on the same page. It's going to take time. Like, they're going to be nights where Jaren's really good. There's going to be nights when Ja's really good. And then it's just kind of what it's going to be their careers. It's not like they have to be good all the time. And it'd be great if they were, but as more time and consistency as they play together, they'll get better at that as well. The Grizzlies take on the Golden State Warriors tonight. And believe it or not, the Grizzlies have a better record, which is not something I thought I'd be saying this year at all. The Grizzlies are 5-8 and the Warriors are 2-12. The Grizzlies get another win tonight?
I think they will. I mean, Golden State just isn't a good team. I mean, you know, you have Eric Paschal's like your best guy. You know,
right.
Draymond obviously hasn't been as great without all the shooting surrounding him. They're not a good team at all. I mean, they might be the worst team in the NBA. So
wow.
I'll expect the Grizzlies to win that night for sure. And this may not actually, you know, be a thing, but I also throw out that Jordan Poole and Jaren Jackson Jr. are really good friends, went to high school together. I'm sure Jaren would love to beat Jordan, especially since obviously Jaren went to Michigan State and Jordan Poole went to Michigan. So, you know, Jaren randomly goes off. You know, I think it'll be because he was one against Jordan Poole.
Little preview for everybody. Look out for a Jaren Jackson Jr. game tonight. I expect him to get the win as well. But that's, man, this Golden State team is just not something that I saw coming at all, for sure. I thought they'd still be decent. But, you know, it happens when you don't have a lot of good NBA players. That's typically what happens. So you lose a lot of games, for sure.
More often than not, yeah.
You lose a lot of games. You can have the best coach in the world, but if you don't have good NBA players, it just doesn't work for some reason. I don't know why. Amari, I appreciate you coming on today, as always. You got anything coming up where people can read? I know you have a Mike Conley job piece up right now, but anything else?
Yeah, I'm working on a feature that I'm hoping will come out this week that is Marco related, and you know, hopefully people will be able to see that by Friday.
Fantastic. Make sure you guys go and subscribe to The Athletic. Again, it's super cheap. You won't even notice it coming out of your bank account. Trust me, it's worth it. Pete Edmondson and Amari do a great job over there covering the team. They're fantastic and both smart individuals. Also, make sure you go and subscribe to the show as always so you don't miss an episode. You can follow me on Twitter at LockedOnGrizz as the show, and my personal handle as at King_producer as well. Amari, I will see you at the game.
All right, Mark, I'll see you later, man.